Wednesday, July 5th, 2017. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. You know, we talk sports every single Wednesday, and we do a little bit different than most sports shows. Yes, we look at the top sports stories. No, we don't really try to manufacture hot takes that make no sense whatsoever. It's not really our style. We like to give some actual insight as to how sports actually work, and hopefully maybe we can make you laugh a couple times along the way. There are a few ways that you can keep up with or contact the Daily Dose. You're going to want to keep these in mind. You can go check out new articles. You can go check out a link to the podcast every single week if you just head over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com. In fact, this week, a poll went up about the weakest conference that is out there currently. And when you see it, you might be a little bit surprised at the results. Might want to head over and check out that poll at dailydosports.wordpress.com. If you've got a question, maybe you have a comment, maybe you need some advice about a number of different subjects, hit us up on email, dailydosports@gmail.com. You can also find us over on Twitter or Facebook. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. Today on the show, you know, we do a new show every single week. And we have a little bit of a different format. It's not like we're taking calls, callers call in and having discussions and arguments. It's not really what we do. But you can still be a part of the Daily Dose anytime that you want to. Just reach out and send us your thoughts. Send us your questions. Whatever you may have, we'll always respond to them. Some of them will make the show immediately. I'll read them right away when I get them. Others will get saved for our annual email show. And that annual email show is today. So today, I will be reading some of the best emails, some of the questions and comments, and some of the things that I get via email, via Twitter, via Facebook, whatever it might be. I've had a number of people reach out and say, hey, what are your thoughts on this? Today, we will be reading those, and I will be giving you some of my answers. So yes, today is the annual email show. Should be a lot of fun. But I just want to talk about a couple of big moves going on currently in the NBA. Because NBA free agency is rolling along, and there are some crazy things happening in the world of the NBA, at least right now. Of course, we talked a little bit last week about New York Knicks president, general manager, whatever he was, nap taker, Phil Jackson. The Knicks fired Phil Jackson. Now, understand this about the Knicks and Phil Jackson. Everything that is going on with the New York Knicks is not Phil Jackson's fault. A good chunk of it is, but it's not all his fault. That's on the owner, James Dolan. But Jackson's tenure in New York might be one of the weirdest ones ever, isn't it? When you think about Phil Jackson's legacy, I mean, he was a player with the Knicks, and he had the reputation of being a scrapper, kind of a tough guy. And then he goes to Chicago, he gets that job, coaches Jordan and Pippen and the Bulls to championships, goes to the Lakers, wins championships with LA with Kobe and Shaq, takes on this job. And I don't know if he didn't want the job, if he didn't care, if it was just a poisonous situation. I don't know what it was, but Phil's kind of just lost his mind, hasn't he? Didn't even seem like he cared. Now, and we talk about this, don't overreact to the immediate Phil legacy. Like right now you say, well, this affects his legacy. Well, maybe. And it might end up affecting his legacy long term. We'll see. It will at least cross your mind though, won't it? When you hear Phil Jackson, hey, you know, Phil Jackson's got 10 rings or 11 rings or 15 rings or however many rings he's got. Yeah, but geez, remember what he did with the Knicks? I'm not saying it's going to completely tarnish his image. It does kind of tweak it a little bit though, doesn't it? Of course, the big news this week, the Los Angeles Clippers sent Chris Paul to the Houston Rockets. They did re-sign Blake Griffin, and J.J. Redick signed with the Philadelphia 76ers. We talked about what free agency might mean to the Los Angeles Clippers. The greatest era in Los Angeles Clippers history is now over. And I mean, it's not a great era compared to a lot of teams, but it's the greatest in Clippers history, no question. That is now over. Here's the one thing that I want everyone to keep in mind when you think about the Clippers, because I know there's a lot of people out there still thinking, man, the Clippers are dying and the Clippers are going to go away and that's all over. They did get Jerry West. And like we talked about a few weeks ago, I don't care what Jerry West says to do with the Clippers. You just do it because he knows exactly what he's doing. And we're already seeing Jerry West's impact on the Los Angeles Clippers. The fact that Chris Paul was able to leave, that he got shipped off to Houston, that's not an accident. The fact that Jerry West said, we're going to keep Griffin, that's not an accident. J.J. Redick going, he would want too much money. There was just nothing they could do about that. That doesn't surprise me. But we're already starting to see Jerry West impact the Clippers. Minnesota Timberwolves traded point guard Ricky Rubio to the Utah Jazz, and it feels like Utah is desperately trying to convince Gordon Hayward to stay by signing a guy there's questions about his shooting, but there's no question about his passing. He can get the ball to Gordon Hayward. Make no mistake, Utah is trying to make a play to keep Gordon Hayward. Understandable. Indiana traded Paul George to Oklahoma City. He will join Russell Westbrook with the Thunder. Remember when Paul George blamed his teammate CJ Miles for not passing him the ball for that final shot against the Cavaliers? Remember that? I think it was game one. Now he's playing with Russell Westbrook. I've got news for you, Paul George. That's going to happen every game, all the time. You thought you were mad at CJ Miles? Oh, that was nothing. You're going to be looking at Russell Westbrook going, do you ever pass the ball? Just like once. Just pass it to me like once. It's coming. Kyle Lowry stays with Toronto. So the Raptors did manage to rope in Kyle Lowry. He will be staying there. So once again, the Raptors can lose in the first round of the playoffs, which is nice. Paul Millsap signed with the Denver Nuggets. What? Not exactly sure what happened there. Perhaps he lost a bet. I don't know. But I know this. As bizarre as this sounds, and don't misunderstand me, the Denver Nuggets are kind of shaping up into a decent, halfway respectable team. I legitimately think the Denver Nuggets this next year, don't get carried, I'm not saying they can like challenge the Warriors, but I am saying they could like contend for like the ninth spot in the playoffs. You know, just outside. Maybe if everything falls right, they could get into the playoffs. Here's the thing with the Nuggets. They were getting ready to make a trade, ship off like Gary Harris and some of this young talent for Kevin Love. That all kind of fell through. That all went by the wayside. Instead, they somehow convinced Paul Millsap to come to Denver. He's a better defender than Kevin Love anyways. And they didn't have to lose any players. They just signed him. They have cap money. They have money. And if they get rid of Danilo Gallinari, they'll have still more money. No, things are kind of shaping up actually surprisingly well for the Nuggets. I'm not saying it's going to last or really turn into anything, but it's kind of nice to see the Nuggets actually not screwing things up. Now, how did Paul Millsap decide to come to Denver? Because it's not a huge contract. And at the end of the contract, there's a team option, not a player option. So it's kind of just bizarre. He's still a pretty solid player. He's not a great player, but he's still a very good player. It does make you wonder if maybe he was like watching the Patriots-Falcons Super Bowl, and Paul Millsap's like talking with one of his boys and just like, dude, I'll tell you what. Patriots come back and win this. I'll sign with somebody like, I don't know, like Denver. And he's like, all right, go. Hey, it's 28-3. What do you got to lose? Well, you're coming to Denver, Paul Millsap. Jrue Holiday stays with the New Orleans Pelicans. Now, that might not sound like much, but understand this. If New Orleans doesn't get Jrue Holiday, I know they have Boogie Cousins. I know they have Anthony Davis. If they don't get Jrue Holiday, they literally don't have a single person in the building that can pass the ball to those guys. That was an absolute must signing. If they didn't get Jrue Holiday, it would have been a disaster. Kyle Korver is going to be staying with Cleveland, so he can miss knockdown three-pointers in the finals, I guess. I don't know. Kyle Korver is staying in Cleveland. Here is the big news, though. Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Sean Livingston, and Andre Iguodala have all re-signed with Golden State. And the biggest thing that is standing out to me right now about all of these moves in the NBA is that everyone is trying to keep up with the Warriors. Everyone is trying to build this super team. There are still some players out there. We have the Gordon Haywards out there. We have the Carmelo Anthonys at least being talked about. I know he's not a free agent, but he's at least being talked about, maybe being traded. Maybe he could go to Cleveland. Everyone's trying to build a super team and keep up with the Warriors. We heard that Cleveland was trying to get Paul George. They were trying to get Chris Paul. That didn't happen. We've heard that Houston, after they got Chris Paul, they were trying to get Paul George too. Didn't happen. There's still just one super team, and that team is the Golden State Warriors. And they are managing to keep their super team intact. We thought, sure, hey, they may lose Andre Iguodala. Won't surprise me. We knew they wouldn't lose Steph. He's not going anywhere. They might lose Sean Livingston, who gives them a nice boost when he comes off the bench. No, they managed to keep him too. Going forward, the team I want to watch is Boston. Remember that Boston has been stockpiling all these draft picks. At what point are they going to cash these picks in? Are they going to do anything? All these teams are trying to keep up with the Golden State Warriors, and so far, they are not able to do it. Some fun things happening in the NBA right now in free agency. It's actually giving us something to watch in this dry time of year. Speaking of dry time of the year, it might be a dry time of the year in sports. It's not here on the Daily Dose. Coming back, we will be reading your emails and trying to answer a few of the questions that you have sent to us here at the Daily Dose.
Dear podcast listener, we accept the fact that we have to sacrifice not only our Wednesdays, but our Fridays as well to entertain you. but we think you are crazy to make us do a promo telling you who we think we are. When you listen to our podcast, you think you know who we are, in the simplest terms, in the most convenient definitions. But what we found out is that each one of us is a dork.
I had the basket case,
and I'm a princess,
and I'm a pothead.
Does that answer your question? Sincerely yours, The Prime Podcast. Find out more at theprimepod.com. Think of the tender
things that we were working on. Movies, anime, comics, video games, and pop culture. These are but mere playthings for the manliest beings in all of podcasting history, the powerful Nerdcast. Hosted by the gurus of geekdom, Corey and Christian, join them each week to discuss all things nerd culture, everything from Star Wars to Dragon Ball Z, and everything in between. Find the powerful Nerdcast on the Rogue Intel Podcast Network at rogueintel.com.
You know, I have said this before, and I will say it again. When I started The Daily Dose, I honestly had no idea what I was getting into. I thought I would do a few shows, and that would be the end of it. Hey, it was fun while it lasted, enjoyed it, and moving on, and that was all it was. What I truly underestimated was the fact that there are highly intelligent people out there that are looking for sports talk that actually makes some sense. They aren't looking for over-the-top hot takes. They aren't looking for things without any real substance. Here at The Daily Dose, we have smart listeners. That is the best part about doing this show, I have found. I love hearing from the listeners. And you will see evidence of our smart listeners in some of the emails and some of the messages that we get. Now, like I told you, when we get a message or we get an email or whatever, and you can hit us on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com. You can just send us a message on Twitter or Facebook, however you want to contact us, feel free. But I always try to respond to those messages immediately. But sometimes I'll save some of the better ones that we get for the summer email show, or sometimes I'll just save them for a show coming up later. And so here we have right now some of the best emails and questions that we've had. First email up is Daily Dose. How are the Houston Rockets going to play with two point guards in Chris Paul and James Harden? I just don't see it working. That comes to us from Quills13 on Twitter. Yeah, that's going to be the big question going into next season. James Harden looked so good playing point guard last year. I mean, it was one thing that we knew he could score, and he still did that. He still averaged 29 points a game. I don't know if we realized how good of a passer he was. He averaged 11 assists per game last year. Now, Chris Paul comes to town. So do you keep Harden there because of how good he looked last year? Do you play Chris Paul there? Move Harden back to the two? How often do you have them both on the floor at the same time? This is going to take some time to work out, but understand this, Quills 13. Mike D'Antoni is one of the best offensive minds in the NBA. He's going to find a way to make this work. So what he may do, he may make one of them the predominant point guard and still play them together. Or maybe he lets them split it up a little bit and, hey, you take it for a while and you take it for a while. I don't know that Chris Paul is going to play a whole lot of two guard. I would see Harden being there, but he may split them up a little bit, give Paul a rest every once in a while. Either way, he keeps one of them on the floor all the time. So he's not going to have any drop off from his point guard position like ever. As long as they're both healthy, he's always going to have a very good point guard leading his offense. That's kind of nice to have. So I understand. I totally get where you're coming from when you say, I don't know how they're going to play together, but understand this. They're not going to have a drop off from their point guard. Now, here is one thing to think about when it comes to Houston. When an offensive team comes up the floor, the defense positions themselves and gets ready to defend. And as you get some ball movement, you get some player movement, the defense will adjust accordingly, right? So say Chris Paul comes up the floor and he gets a high screen with Clint Capella. Those two defenders involved in that play, they've got to play screen defense, whatever that might be. Maybe they go under the screen, maybe they go over the screen, maybe they trap the screen, maybe they switch the screen, whatever it might be. The rest of the defense is basically in a ready stance, watching the screen, defending their players, and they're kind of just loaded up, right? That's all they're doing. Now, say you run that screen, but over on the backside, you've also got James Harden coming off a staggered screen. And now he's going to be open as Chris Paul reads the defense. See the difference that that does make? And like I said, I know having two guys playing that both play point guard is kind of a weird situation. A lot of times you're going to see Houston facing a defense that isn't just loaded up waiting for them. Well, now you can't do that because you have two guys that can dribble it, that can pass it, and that can score. So I understand what you're saying with two point guards, but understand Chris Paul and James Harden can create some very, very big problems for opposing defenses. It's going to be fun to see how Mike D'Antoni approaches this, but don't just look at this and say, yeah, that won't work. Remember, you can always, always find a spot for a good player. It's pretty rare that I look at the floor and say, you know what? I've just got too many good players on the floor. That's my biggest problem. I really just need to get some bad players out there and we'd have a lot more continuity. No, I really want more good players. And that's what Houston got. I'm not saying Houston is going to challenge the Warriors. I don't see that unless they pick up somebody else. But Mike D'Antoni will make this work somehow. I can't imagine this being a big failure. Our next email. You know, I get these emails and I kind of put them aside. I don't want to read them. I just kind of want to react to them live. So, Clint, love the show. Who deserves the majority of the blame for the Cleveland Cavaliers losing in the NBA Finals? That is from Bill R. Bill R., thank you. I appreciate that. Appreciate you taking the time to send us something. You know, it's tough to assign blame to the Cleveland Cavaliers when the Golden State Warriors were just so good. But I guess if you really want to assign blame, there's enough blame to go around, isn't there? When you watch some of those games, you can blame like Kyrie Irving for dribbling too much. He dribbled way too much. Was that game three? He went down, milked a bunch of time off the clock, and then missed a shot. Those kind of things sometimes come back to haunt you. So you can blame Kyrie for that. You could blame LeBron James for passing the ball to Kyle Korver when the game is absolutely on the line and saying, hey, LeBron, you're kind of the big dog. Like, go score. I understand what you're doing. I understand that you're passing the ball to one of the best three-point shooters in history, but you're also taking your chances that Kyle Korver is going to be the guy that, you know, wins you a title. I don't know if you're going to feel great about that. So you can blame LeBron James if you want. You can blame Kyle Korver for missing most of those shots when he got them, because most of the shots he was getting, he was wide open, catch and shoot, this is what you do, and he didn't hit nearly enough of them. You can blame head coach Tyronn Lue for not getting his guys to play hard enough or smart enough, especially at the defensive end. I don't know that they really played very hard. You'd watch Golden State get out and run, and you'd watch them filling lanes, and it was consistently 3 versus 2, 3 versus 2, 4 versus 3. That doesn't work. And again, first rule, so many people get it confused. When you talk about transition defense in basketball, you say, what's the first rule of transition defense? Stop the ball. No, it's not. That's not the first rule. I know a lot of people think that. Stop the ball. It's not stop the ball. It is get back. If we have five people get back, then we stop the ball, we'll be just fine. If I just stop the ball by myself and it's a 3-on-1, I can't defend everyone. First rule of defense is get back. So we can blame Tyronn Lue for whatever reason. He couldn't get his guys to buy in enough to sprint back on defense and match up. And as a result, they gave up transition points. Defensively, how many times did we see them go to sleep? Game three again. Kevin Durant comes down, game on the line. LeBron stands back in the paint and watches him shoot the three to win it. I don't know, maybe Tyronn Lue should have said something or did something. I don't know. I guess you can blame him. You can blame the Cavs bench if you'd like. There's plenty of blame to be handed out, is what I'm saying. Now, who is actually going to get the blame? Well, that's Kevin Love. I mean, obviously, who else is going to get blamed? The Cavs have been trying to ship him out the second Game 5 ended, despite the fact that K-Love was actually a lot better than people think he was. I mean, in those five games against the Warriors in the finals, Kevin Love averaged 16 points and 11 rebounds a game. And now they're like shopping him. They're trying, hey, anybody want him? Anybody want him? Yeah, it's kind of his fault. We're kind of putting it all on him. Kevin Love, he is going to be the guy that pays for everyone else's sins, and it wasn't really his fault. I don't know why we want to blame K-Love or why they do. Everyone else is kind of getting a pass except for Kevin Love. He's going to be the guy that pays for it. So plenty of blame to go around. Who's actually going to get the blame? Yeah, that's going to be Kevin Love. Understand this too. Remember when LeBron went down to Miami and he had Dwayne Wade and he had Chris Bosh? And we're looking at Chris Bosh. And we're like, dude, I thought you were good. You aren't very good. Like, I'm watching you. You're kind of awful. Chris Bosh didn't suddenly get terrible. It is not as easy as people think to play with LeBron. He dominates in every way. And so it's almost trying to find, where can I fit in? How can I contribute? What can I do? And I think we've seen the same situation with Kevin Love. He's just kind of tried to find his spot. I'll rebound, I guess. I'll play a little, you know, back to the basket here and there. And if I'm open in transition and I can take a shot, I'll do that. He's just trying to find his spot. We saw Chris Bosh go through the exact same thing when he had to play with LeBron James. It's not as easy as everyone would have you think that it is. Kevin Love wasn't that bad, but he's going to pay for this whole thing. Next email. Let's see. Daily Dose. Love the top fives every week. I know Golden State is fun to watch, but are they good for basketball? That comes to us from Kevin in Portland. Kevin, this doesn't say if you're in Portland, Oregon or Portland, Maine. I don't know. But wherever you are in Portland, thank you for the email. Yeah, you know, I've heard that question a few times. When we already know who's going to win the NBA Finals, I mean, why watch, right? I mean, that is why, like, for me personally, I know that's why I don't care much about Hollywood. I already know how most movies are going to end, so I don't care. In fact, Mrs. Daily Dose kind of gets frustrated with me because we'll be going to a movie, and like 5 minutes in, I'm checking my watch, like, what time does this thing get over? Because I already know, you got to go find the bad guy, and the good guy's going to get in a trap, and he's got to get out of the trap, and then he's got to go rescue the girl, and he's got to go get the big device that's going to blow everybody up. And like, I can already see it all forming. I know how it's going to end. The world isn't going to blow up, or it's going to be a short movie. I know how it's going to end, but can we get through this process? Because we want to kind of get the show on the road here. I want to get out of here. I got things to do. If we already know how sports are going to end, then there really isn't any reason to watch these games, right? Are the Warriors good for the NBA? Are they good for basketball? But here's the one thing about Golden State. As much as we might say they're not good for basketball, and as dominant as they were, they lost one game in all of the playoffs. We did watch. The NBA Finals had the best numbers that they've had since 1998 when the Chicago Bulls beat the Utah Jazz in Jordan's last real year. Yes, he did whatever he did with the Wizards, but in his last real year, that had the highest ratings. Here's a question that I would like to pose to my Daily Dose listeners. Again, I've got smart listeners. I'm going to throw this out to you. What is the greatest era in NBA history? Think about that for a second. Because when you think about that, you might say maybe it was the 1980s with the Lakers and the Celtics. Those two teams won like 7 out of 10 championships in that decade. Or maybe you say those 90s Bulls, where Jordan's Bulls won 6 out of 10 in the 90s. Maybe you're thinking it's the 2000s with the Spurs and the Lakers battling for championships it seemed like every single year. Either way, we are talking about some semblance of a dynasty, right? Now, for me personally, this is just me, I like to see entertaining basketball. I like to see a flow to the game. I like to see 5 players moving as one. That is fun to me. That is fun to watch. We know that the Warriors are fun to watch. They are playing really, really entertaining basketball. And I don't think that can be a bad thing. Now, other teams may try to mimic that style. Kids are already trying to mimic that style. And while we will, and we already are starting to see a number of kids take horrible three-pointers to try to be like Steph Curry, we are also starting to see kids learning to move, learning to cut, learning to dribble, learning to pass, learning to rotate defensively, because that's what the Warriors do. They play hard. They transition. They push the basketball. That part is good for kids to see. So I would still rather see free-flowing basketball. This style that we're seeing now, I would rather see it than the walk it up, dump it into the post. Everyone stands there and watches. That isn't nearly as entertaining to me. Remember those 90s years? And as much as I liked the Bulls and watching Jordan and his greatness, remember those like Knicks teams? They were painful to watch. Just absolutely horrible. Winning games like 75-74. There was no flow to the game. It was choppy. It was physical. It was too physical. I would rather see free flowing basketball than that. So on that reason alone, I actually do think Golden State is good for basketball. I understand that people are, well, they're too much of a favorite. They're too much of a super team. I understand all that. But I also think there is a side of Golden State that we look at and say, yeah, but there are things that we are watching them do we haven't seen being done in the NBA in a number of years. Going back probably to the 80s, we haven't seen consistent basketball like this. Running, moving hard, cutting, screening, those kind of things kind of got lost for a while. So on that note, I would say that Golden State is actually good for basketball. Kevin, thank you for sending that question in though. Moving on to the next email, let's see what we have. Clint, I know you aren't a big era comparison guy. Giving nothing is ever equal. Is there any real value comparing players from different eras? Can't we just acknowledge greatness? That is from Jeremy. Doesn't say where Jeremy is from. Jeremy, I actually agree with you. And I think we do a really poor job of comparing eras. We know, just as humans kind of continue to breed and evolve and these kind of things, we know that human beings are getting bigger, right? The training is better today. Players are healthier than they've ever been. Coaching is better than it's ever been. Scouting is better than it's ever been. So when we compare these eras and we look at a guy, and I want to try to get a guy that size-wise still makes sense. Let's say, take a guy like Wilt Chamberlain. And we say, well, he couldn't play today. He's too skinny. He'd just be another player. Or maybe we look at a Tom Brady and we say, well, he's undoubtedly the greatest player ever. Our deciding points that we kind of base these on are kind of inconsistent, aren't they? Like if we brought Wilt Chamberlain to today, he doesn't have to still play with the old 50s training methods, does he? Does he still have to wear the short shorts and like the old Chuck Taylors, or can we like get him a pair of Jordans? You know what I mean? Like, it seems kind of unfair. Hey, and by the way, you know, the boxing training, you're going to be lifting bags of sand while these guys are in like these state-of-the-art gymnasiums. That seems a little bit unfair to me. So we kind of tweak it and we say to bring those guys up to today, I don't think they could play. I think that's unfair. I think that's something that isn't really fair to the players of past eras. And I think we do a poor job of that. I totally get what you're saying, and I think it's unfair that we do that. I think we should, in a lot of ways, just enjoy greatness. But at the same time, it's sports talk. What are you going to do? I've actually spent a lot of time on this show trying to argue for past eras and saying it's kind of silly to do these comparisons. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Our deciding points that we choose to make our arguments on are really inconsistent, aren't they? We say that it's the most championships. Well, but only for certain players. It's the most championships, but not really, like, not all the players, because some of those players, there's no way they can be in this conversation. So we say, like with LeBron James, we say, well, you don't have enough championships because Jordan has 6 and you've only got 3 or whatever it is. Well, we ignore guys like Bill Russell. Or we look at the same thing in football and we look at Tom Brady and we say, well, Tom Brady's got to be the greatest. He's got 5 rings. Of course, Joe Montana never lost a Super Bowl. So I guess Joe Montana can be right there. We totally push Terry Bradshaw out of the conversation. Terry Bradshaw's got 4. He never lost one either. So we kind of pick and choose. It's kind of weird because like other positions, we don't do that. We don't look at like the greatest linebacker in history and say, well, it's Lawrence Taylor based on his championships. No, you say it's Lawrence Taylor based on I saw him completely destroy an opponent. I didn't have to go off just championships. Yeah, he had a couple of rings or whatever, but he doesn't have the most rings ever. Or like a defensive tackle or a defensive lineman. We would never rate it on that. I think Mike Lodish has a ton of championships. We wouldn't say he's the greatest defensive lineman in history. So it's kind of silly how we do that. Just we kind of pick and choose when we want to compare eras. Dan Marino doesn't have any rings whatsoever. Drop him onto the Patriots offense today. He's going to be really, really good. He's probably going to win a few rings. So yeah, you're right, Jeremy. It is a big era comparison thing, and we love to do that in sports talk. There is a part of me that says, can't we just look at players and say, kind of the eye test. Talked about that with Russ McKinstry a few weeks back. Sometimes it's just the eye test. I can look at a player and say, that guy is a legitimate player. He could play in any era. He could play any time. He's just that guy. We can't just acknowledge greatness because that's not what sports talk does, but I understand what you're saying. Thank you very much for the email. Move on to our next email. Dear Daily Dose, I have a couple of questions for you. I'm ready. I know you won't read them on air, but I'm going to submit them anyway. I don't like the way this is starting right now, and I don't know what this one's going to say. First, you call it the Daily Dose, but the podcast only comes out once a week. Shouldn't it be the Weekly Dose? Yeah, thanks. That's adorable. That's great. Thanks. And second, there's more to this. After you make fun of us and make fun of the show, there's more to this. Second, whatever happened to those round suction cup marks that the Olympic swimmers had? Was that just a fad, or how come I never see them on any other athletes? Or was there just something in the water that were causing those marks? That's from Larry in Centennial. No wonder. I don't even know how to respond to this. You know, we have had a few people ask us about doing a daily show, and I guess that's something we might have to consider. If there's enough of a demand, if we have enough listeners and that kind of thing, I guess we could consider looking at doing a daily show and releasing something first thing every morning. I don't know. If you have an opinion on that, by all means, I'd love to hear it. We can come out and react to things, you know, in real time and not just a once a week thing. But like I said, if you have an opinion on us doing a daily show, let us know. What was his other question about the suction cups? If you don't know what Larry's talking about, and maybe you don't remember this, swimmers in the Brazilian Olympics, remember that? Was that last summer? They were showing up to meets with these giant hickeys on their backs, on their shoulders, on their arms. That is actually called cupping. It's an ancient form, like this alternative medicine, where a therapist puts these special cups on your skin and it creates suction. And they say that people do it. It helps with pain. It helps with inflammation in your muscles. It helps with blood flow. It's supposed to stimulate blood flow. I guess it's kind of like getting a deep tissue massage, so they say. I don't know if people have stopped doing that. You know, maybe athletes are doing it in other sports. We just don't know because we can't see the giant hickeys under the jerseys. I don't know. Or maybe you're right. Maybe it was just something in the water in Brazil. That water did turn green down in Brazil. So maybe it's just like giant ringworm. I don't know. We can't be sure is what I'm saying. And Larry, thank you, but no thank you for that particular email. We can throw that away. Okay, next email. After that debacle, Clint, love the interview with Russ McKinstry. He seemed to be able to jump right in, and his knowledge of youth sports and just basketball in general was really fun to listen to. Will he be coming back? That is from Ben in Colorado Springs. Ben, we will definitely be having Russ McKinstry back. You know, I was fortunate enough to work with Russ for a number of years. He and I have always had a great relationship. I learned so much from him, not just on the basketball court, but obviously off the basketball court as well. Tried to soak up anything, anytime he was talking or speaking, whether it's to the team or whether it's to the coaches or whatever. I just tried to soak up as much as I possibly could. We just have always had great conversation. Definitely expect Russ McKinstry to be coming back to the show now and then. Love to get his thoughts on anything, on football, on, you know, the fights and on the NBA and college hoops and college football and all those kind of things. He's a smart guy. He understands sports from so many different perspectives. I've actually asked Russ and just kind of gave him some of the feedback that I heard. A number of people reached out and said they really enjoyed those interviews. Told him that. He said, hey, anytime that you want me to come back on the show, I'd be glad to come back on the show. So definitely expect Russ McKinstry to be coming back on the Daily Dose. He will be returning at some point. Next email. Daily Dose. I'm not even saying that I disagree with you. But why do you scrutinize LeBron James so much? Being a great player or because he invites it with things like the decision and the articles and such? That is from Mick in London. Mick in London. Wait a second. We have listeners in London. I'm not sure if I knew that. I'm not sure anybody told me we have listeners in London. I'm going to get to your question in just a minute, Mick, and thank you for sending it. It's a good question. But we have listeners in London? That is seriously awesome. You know, I've heard from listeners that we have in South America. I've heard from Germany. I've heard from Russia. I've heard from Australia. I've heard from the U.S. pretty much everywhere, like California, Colorado, Arizona, Washington, D.C., Pennsylvania, Florida. I've heard from Hawaii. I've heard from pretty much everywhere in between. Can I just say this real quick before I get to that question? I love hearing from any of the listeners out there. I love finding out where it is that you are from. It is absolutely fascinating to me. I don't care where you are, what country you're at, what state you're in. I love to hear from you, just throwing that out there. To be able to hear that there are people in other countries listening to the Daily Dose blows my mind, honestly. Okay, now, let me read this question again in my London accent, and I'm going to warn you ahead of time, this is going to be horrible, so I apologize in advance, but I feel like this email would have a little more, just have a little more gusto if we read it in the London accent. Daily Dose, I'm not saying that I disagree with you entirely, but why do you scrutinize LeBron James so much? Being a great player, or because he invites it with things like the decision, articles, and such? That's from Mick in London. That's a horrible accent. Anyways, yeah, we had to do that. I felt like we had to get kind of the British accent going. You know, I do scrutinize LeBron James quite a bit. And honestly, there are a number of reasons for it. If you go back, I'm sure if you went back and you searched through the archive and you found past podcasts, you could find, we actually did at one point, I don't know, maybe a year ago, whenever it was, we did a top five of why people don't like LeBron James, because there is a big faction of people out there that love him. There is a big faction of people out there that don't like him. And we did a top five of the people that don't like him, why they don't like him. I get tired of the sports media jamming LeBron James down our throat. Especially when the greatest player ever stuff gets thrown out at us and just he's the greatest and accept it and like it. Really? Again, eye test. I understand statistically. I understand longevity. I get all that. I also understand the rules that allow him to play the way he does today. I also understand that it's a different era today. And I realize that's not entirely his fault, but he completely gets overcovered. I get tired of his passive aggressive responses on social media. And just in the media in general. In the finals, they ask him about whether or not he's ready for the next game. And instead of just saying, I'm ready, we're ready, let's go. He says, well, I'm averaging this amount of points, so I'm ready. So is that like a shot at the rest of your teammates? Or are you being confident? Or are you kind of a jerk and kind of backhanding your teammates to say, well, I'm ready. I've been doing my job, but these clowns aren't doing anything. These clowns that I assembled, that I put together, they're not carrying their weight. I don't know. He sends out tweets like, it's okay to know you've made a mistake because we all make mistakes at times. Just be ready to live with whatever comes with it. Are you saying that to us, or are you saying that you've made mistakes? Again, it's just kind of that passive-aggressive weirdness. He's a weird dude. You know, the decision to leave and go to Miami definitely didn't help me like LeBron anymore, but hey, guys move. That's just kind of how sports is today. I get that. So the decision might not have helped, but I think the way that he portrayed the decision probably hurt more than actually just going. If he just come on and said, hey, I'm going to Miami, that's that. But there was the whole unveiling and the press conference and all that. That kind of seemed silly to me. The flopping doesn't help. Having said all this, I do think LeBron James is probably the greatest athlete I've ever seen play basketball. He is so big. He is so strong. He has such touch for being a huge, giant guy. It's that darn history of quitting. That's the thing that probably bothers me the most. He has a history of certain times he doesn't feel like playing. Maybe that's what it is. As a former coach, I don't deal very well with guys who just, for some reason, don't particularly feel like playing. You know, Mick in London, thank you for that question. I think you've actually kind of helped me find what it is about LeBron that bothers me. I don't particularly like that on certain nights, he doesn't feel like playing. So see, we've learned things here. That's the bottom line. Here on the Daily Dose, we have learned some things today. Hey, we've got some NFL questions, college football, and a question about the Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather fight. And also, is there any chance that sports are being fixed? Got a lot more still coming up. Hey, just a quick reminder, make sure that you head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose. Do any shopping that you might need to do over there. Loot Crate delivers the best in merchandising and collectibles featuring your favorite TV shows, movies, and video games. You can go pick up a crate, a subscription to crates, or just get individual items. You know, the July crate is called Animation, and it features items from Rick and Morty, Bob's Burgers, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and Futurama. They've got all kinds of merchandise over there, pretty much anything you can think of. And this is the licensed memorabilia. It's not knockoff stuff that you wouldn't want. You can always go back. You can order past crates if you missed a crate. And the best thing about ordering from Loot Crate, when you place your order, just put Daily Dose in the coupon box at checkout, DALYDOSE. You will get 10%. Off of your order. So make sure that you head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose and do your shopping over there. Got a few more emails that we want to make sure that we get to before we finish up our email show here. Let's get to our next one. Love the Daily Dose. What successful NFL rookie from last year do you see taking a step backward in 2017? That is from Devin. Let's see. That's a good question. I got to think about that a little bit because I got to think about who came out last year. Let's see. Dak Prescott. I think Dak Prescott was the rookie of the year, wasn't he? I believe he was. Ezekiel Elliott. Joey Bosa. Carson Wentz started off strong, kind of faded. Will Fuller in Houston had a nice start. You know, I could see Will Fuller take a step back in Houston just because of the quarterback situation. But honestly, can it be any worse than it was last year with Brock Osweiler? Probably not. So I guess I would probably say Dak Prescott. And that's not a knock on Dak Prescott. It's not even necessarily a knock on the Dallas Cowboys. It's just that NFL defenses, if they do one thing, NFL defenses tend to catch up. I know the offenses are always evolving. They're always getting better. The rules are always kind of leaning in favor of the offense. And what the defenses do is they say, okay, give us some time. Let us read some things. Let us get some film. And then we catch up and we start to shut that down too. NFL defenses do catch up. They'll have a full season of film on Dak Prescott. And they will look to make things extremely difficult for him. Young quarterbacks. And again, this isn't a knock on Dak Prescott. It's just that young quarterbacks have such a tough job. Even if you have early success, those defenses, they're always scheming. They're always trying to shut you down, take away what you like to do. So they'll look at a player like Dak Prescott and say, okay, what is it he's having success with? Okay, let's just take that away. And he's got to find something else. And so based on that, Dak Prescott had a phenomenal season as a rookie. You would think that in a way, he's kind of got to go back just a little bit, doesn't he? He'll have a tougher schedule. The thing that Dak does have in his favor is that offensive line is no joke, and he's got a great running game with Ezekiel Elliott behind him. So we know if you've got that running game, you've got that offensive line, that's just that security blanket that the young quarterback needs. Kind of nice to have that. But defenses are going to look for a way to attack Dak Prescott, and I guess that could mean a little bit of a sophomore slump for him. I'm not saying he's going to all of a sudden be horrible. It's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying it might be a little tougher for Dak Prescott in his sophomore year. I guess you could say Ezekiel Elliott, he's got some off-the-field stuff that he's going to have to deal with. Remember, he pulled some girl's top up or down or something. I don't know. And I think he's still got some kind of a domestic case pending with him. So I guess you could say Ezekiel. I'm not trying to pick on the Cowboys. They just had two great rookies. As rookies, you would think, I guess they would take maybe a little bit of a step back. So I guess that would be my answer. Devin, thank you for the email. Next email up. You know, I see this one a lot. This one specifically says just Daily Dose, is the NBA fixed? That is from Alan in Kansas City, but I actually do see this question posed to me quite a bit. I think the sport is fixed, or the refs in this game seem shady. Look, I'm not saying those things don't happen. I think it benefits everyone in a business sense if in a 7-game series, the home team gets most of the calls so that we're sure it goes 7 games, right? Everybody sells tickets and sells merchandise and sells concessions and sells parking and all those things. The networks make their money. They sell their commercials for 7-game series. If David Stern was still commissioner of the NBA, there's no way the Golden State Warriors would have won in 5 games. That would have gone 7. I'll promise you that. David Stern did not like short series. I don't know if that's a fix. It feels a little fix-ish. I don't know that it's fixed. I think it's more almost understood that in basketball, it's tough to win on the road. You've got to beat the other team. You've got to come up with plays right in the face of opposing fans. And you've got to deal with a little bit of officiating. I'm not talking about completely slanted officiating. I'm not talking about officiating that is totally biased one way. That's not what I'm talking about. But unless it's excessive and over the top, that's just how you prepare for games on the road. We did that at the high school level. Hey, we're going to have to be sharp tonight. We've got to beat them. We've got to beat their fans. Do not let the refs affect the outcome of this game tonight. We talked about those things in our locker rooms at the high school level all the time. And I don't think the high school games are fixed in any way, but that's just how we approached it. Here is the problem. Because like I said, I get asked this a lot. Is this sport fixed? Was the Super Bowl fixed? Was the NBA Finals fixed? Whatever. Here's the problem with fixing any sport. There's too many hands involved in sports to fix these things. So who fixes it? Like, are the refs fixing it? Is it just one ref that's fixing it? Are all the refs in on it? Like, that's a really tough secret to keep. Are the players in on it? Are all of them in on it? Or just like the main players, like certain players know about it, like it's wrestling and everybody knows and they've all got a script that they follow? Or is it just a select few of the players? Do the coaches know what's going on? Again, that's a lot of people. And that's a lot of people to keep a secret. So if you're saying, I think all the refs are in on it. Well, there's 3 officials that are somehow keeping this secret that, hey, this is all kind of fixed. Don't tell anyone. But all this stuff is just kind of fixed. And how exactly do they fix it? So every single call that night goes against one team? I mean, that would be kind of obvious. They don't ever do that. Well, no, make it look balanced. But we're definitely going to want to make sure this team gets it. I understand we've had games that you can look back and go, man, that's Sacramento and Los Angeles back in 2002 or whatever that was. Yeah, that was kind of an aberration. That was kind of really, really weird. I totally understand that. I thought that in game 4 this year, Golden State versus Cleveland, I thought that was really, really weird. Golden State was up 3-0. And in the first quarter, you saw the Cavaliers get every single call. They went to the line. There was so much talk about it. You wonder if that kind of balanced it back out and they were like, hey, we don't want that. The thing is, these leagues, if let's say the NBA was fixed, let's say that we found out officials were being told how to call these specific things, the sport would go under. The National Basketball Association would completely go under because bettors would not tolerate it. Vegas would not tolerate it. When you start seeing lines come off the board, then we can start talking about fixing. But as long as there's a line, Vegas isn't taking the loss for anybody, right? So I don't really think that games are actually fixed. I think you could have a shady person here or there, random places, but I don't think that games really fixed. Honestly, though, if you are looking for fixed sports, it's too complicated to fix team sports. There's too many people. Like I said, there's too many people involved. If you want to fix a sport, go get the individual sports. Those are better targets. It's easier to get one guy to do something like that. And you know you're going to get your money's worth. Well, what if it's just one guy, but he doesn't make the crucial call that comes down? You might lose all your money. In a one-on-one kind of situation, I think those individual sports are better targets than things like the NBA or the NFL or MLB or, you know, NHL, those kind of things. I think those are tougher to fix. I think it would be a lot harder. It's easier to get one guy to do something. Sports like tennis, And how many tennis matches are we just watching and looking at the replays and analyzing every single play? You know what? I don't know if he gave great effort there. Now we have the computer, so we can't even say the judges. Review, you can see, boom, right there. The ball was in, the ball was out. Boxing, of course. We saw just this last weekend, the Manny Pacquiao-Jeff Horn. That fight ended. Everyone, it looked like Manny Pacquiao had won. They give the decision to Jeff Horn, said he dictated the action, all kinds of criticism there. It's easier, I think, to get a hold of judges in that kind of situation, again, in a one-on-one sport, than it ever would be to dictate the outcome of a team sport. I think that would be a lot harder. You know, the sport, I think, honestly, that would be the easiest sport to fix would probably be like horse racing. Because how do you know? Like, just don't whip the horses hard. It isn't like the horse, after, you know, the race, is up at the podium saying like, you know, I don't know what it was. I felt like I ran a good race. I'm not sure my jockey was really giving it his best effort. You know, I know we're a team here, but it felt like I was doing everything and my jockey really wasn't holding up his end of the bargain. That would be kind of like a LeBron James sort of a horse, you know, to passive aggressively blame everyone else. But no, I don't think the NBA is fixed. Honestly, what I think it is in team sports, I think sometimes refs just make mistakes. Every single play is scrutinized. Every single play is analyzed. Every single play is reviewed. Reffing is so hard. I don't think that the average fan realizes how difficult of a job officiating a game is. There's 50 million things you're trying to process as an official. It's easy to miss things. It's easy to get things wrong. I think so many times we want to blame officials and say, this is fixed, the officials are bad. I think sometimes it's a really, really hard job. So no, I don't think the NBA is fixed. I think there are opportunities to fix things here and there. I don't believe sports are fixed unless they start pulling those off the Vegas board. When we start seeing sporting events come off of the Vegas board to bet, then you can start questioning things. Vegas doesn't lose money for anyone, and I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's the biggest name boxer out there. I don't care if it's the New England Patriots. I don't care if the Golden State Warriors. If there was something fishy, Vegas would have that game pulled off their board so fast. And, you know, a couple guys might take maybe a baseball bat to the knee here or there. I'm just saying it could happen. So no, I don't think things are fixed. I've noticed that especially when your team loses, it's first thing we say a lot of times as fans, I think it's fixed. That's easier than just say, no, I think the other team beat us. Hope that answers your question. Like I said, I get that question a lot. Speaking of the fight game, next question here. Clint, enjoy the show. Enjoy your takes on boxing. Thank you. I still, for some reason, watch that stupid sport. What has better odds of happening? Conor McGregor knocks out Floyd Mayweather. Yeah, I don't think that has very good odds. Or Conor McGregor never touches Floyd Mayweather. That is from Ed. Ed, that's... That might be one of my favorite questions. That might be the best line of the fight. If you can get that line in Vegas, honestly, I have no interest in this fight. I won't watch the McGregor-Mayweather fight. It's a carnival. It's not a true fight. I like Conor McGregor. He seems like a wildly charismatic character. I understand that. He's not going to win this fight. I don't see any way that he can make this fight even be competitive. I won't watch this fight. The problem for Conor McGregor, and he's a scrappy kid. He can punch. He can strike. I understand all those things. Well, what if he just catches him? I understand that. The problem is that Floyd Mayweather is one of the slickest defensive fighters in boxing history. Manny Pacquiao couldn't catch him, ever. Canelo Alvarez couldn't catch him. Shane Mosley couldn't catch him. Oscar De La Hoya couldn't catch him. These are guys that trained their entire lives to box and catch guys like Floyd Mayweather, and they couldn't do it. So why in the world would a guy who has never boxed be able to catch him? And here's the other problem. Floyd's going to get better as the fight gets longer. He is a lifelong fighter. Floyd Mayweather was raised in the gym from the time he could like walk. He was in the gym because dad and I think uncle were trainers and fighters and all that. So he was around it constantly. He's going to get better as the fight goes. He will get a feel for how Conor McGregor moves. He will counter. He will score. I think if Conor McGregor is going to do anything whatsoever, it will be early, and I think Floyd will be ducking and moving and wearing him out. I guess, actually, on that line, and that's a great line, McGregor knocks out Mayweather. I think that has zero chance of happening. Or McGregor never hits Mayweather. That might have a 1% chance of happening. I guess I would take the odds on McGregor actually never touches him. But like a one punch, like say he gets a punch, one body punch, does that count? I don't know. For me, I think the odds are better that McGregor never touches Floyd Mayweather. You would think they would at some point kind of have some sort of collision or some sort of something. So that's a that's a great line. Very smart question. I like the question. I think Mayweather's going to completely dominate that fight. Like everyone else, I'll be cheering for McGregor to somehow catch him and knock him out, but I'm not going to watch that fight. Funny question, though. Okay, moving forward, we got a few more questions we've got to get here. Clint, I love that this is a Rocky Mountain-based podcast. Thank you. That's just how we roll. You are in Mountain West country. What is the best rivalry in the Mountain West? That is from Scott on Facebook. You know, this is a good area. This is a great area. I don't know if people outside of the Mountain West region understand that, but the Mountain West schools do have some good rivalries. They actually do. This has changed in recent years, but if you think back to the old WAC, remember what used to be the old WAC? There were some really good rivalries in that. I mean, you had Arizona and Arizona State. You had BYU in Utah. You had UNLV in Nevada. There were a number of really, really good rivalries in all sports across the board. I know Air Force and Colorado State, they play for the Ram Falcon Trophy or whatever it is, and that's a pretty good one. I've been to a few Air Force Colorado State games. Those are pretty good. That's a decent rivalry. Boise State and Nevada don't particularly like each other, but I think the best rivalry in the Mountain West has to be Colorado State and Wyoming. They have the border war. Fort Collins, Colorado, and Laramie, Wyoming are only like 65 miles apart. They play in football, at least. They play for the Bronze Boot, which is like a traveling trophy, and every year they do that in football. But it isn't just football with that rivalry. Basketball, women's basketball, Colorado State and Wyoming, just across the board, they have a really, really nice rivalry going. I would say most of the people around the nation in general, probably not aware of that rivalry at all. That's a pretty heated rivalry. A few years back, I know there was kind of some controversy. Wyoming students were chanting alcoholic at Colorado State coach Larry Eustace because he was fired, you know, back at Iowa State for having photos taken of him at a party. He looks pretty lit and he's got some undergraduates around him. And so he can get a little dirty. That's kind of what those rivalries, they're a little heated. That's kind of how that goes. There's a genuine dislike for each other at Colorado State and Wyoming. So I guess I would probably say that, but thank you for the question. Next up. Hey, Daily Dose, I heard your interview with the high school basketball coach, and it got me wondering, roughly what percentage of time do head coaches actually spend coaching? That is from Jordan13100, whatever, on Twitter. That's a really good question, Jordan, because actually, you do spend a ton of time doing stuff you really don't want to do. As a coach, and I can only speak from the high school level, but you're nonstop busy, but a lot of what you're doing doesn't necessarily specifically have to do with coaching. So when I was a head coach, I probably spent, I don't know, 40 to 50 hours a week on things related specifically to my basketball program, but not necessarily coaching. So say an hour a day on practice planning, just on practice planning and preparation, probably an hour or two a day, 2 or 3 hours a day in actual practice, couple hours a day, usually 1 or 2 on film study, either of filming former opponents, looking at my kids on film, or maybe statting games or things like that. Plus you've got games themselves. Plus you've got media of any kind you might have to do. Player meetings that are basketball related. Meetings with your coaches on your staff. League meetings with coaches around the league. Scouting opponents, preparing game plans. You've got meetings with administrators, talking to parents at every single level, especially if you're the head coach at like high school, you're the varsity head coach. Freshman parents will call you. I mean, those kind of things constantly happen. You've got fundraising stuff. You've got dealing with non-basketball issues. So maybe you've got a player dealing with an eligibility issue. Maybe they got trouble, whatever it might be. A lot of that stuff is the stuff that you spend your time doing. A lot of that stuff, honestly, is the stuff that saps your strength. And that's just at the high school level. I can't imagine what coaches at the next levels are doing, where they've got to meet with boosters and parents and all the media demands that they would have, you see at the collegiate levels even and beyond that. Unfortunately, it kind of goes with the territory. You know, when you take the job, that's what you're going to get. My absolute, and we talked about this with Russ a few weeks ago, my absolute favorite part of the day was the 2 to 3 hours in practice. That was the best part of the day. The preparing for practice, I didn't mind. The film study, I actually didn't mind. Scouting opponents, usually you would go with another coach. Scouting opponents was something that I always look back on as I really, really enjoyed it. Preparing for those games, coming up with game plans. How are we going to beat this team? What are we going to do? That kind of stuff I loved. But the parent that calls you at like 6 a.m. on Saturday morning to complain about their kids' playing time, and then you've got to have a meeting with administration because that same parent also called your athletic director, called your principal, called your, I don't know, superintendent complaining about how you didn't get them enough playing time. That's the stuff that wears you out, and that's the stuff that you spend your time, just nonsense that you end up spending your time on. You know, the mom that complains after you win a big rivalry game about how their kid only got 10 shots. And, you know, I don't know if you realize it, but they've been averaging 12 shots. I wasn't sure if there was some sort of problem or if you had maybe told them not to take as many. I don't know. It's just how it worked out. That's the stuff that honestly drives good coaches out of the business. So to answer your question, I would say you probably out of the 40 to 50 hours you would spend in a week, probably specifically just coaching is probably 15 to 20 hours, and the other 25 to 30 hours is nonsense that you don't want to deal with. I don't know if I have that ratio exactly right, but it's probably pretty close. And those other hours were the ones that I genuinely hated the most. Clint, looking forward to your college football and NFL previews that you release every year. Thank you. I appreciate that. If you don't know, coming up here in another, I don't know, month or so, I guess, maybe a little longer than that, we'll be coming out with our college and our NFL previews. We preview each division in the NFL, and we preview each conference in college football, kind of give you our unique daily dose spin on each of those things. You can check those out at dailydosesports.wordpress.com. You can head over there and find those, and we'll talk about those as we get closer. But thank you for that. There's a lot of hype with Alabama-Florida State to open the season. But isn't the Florida-Michigan game the game with the higher stakes? That is from Jim. Thank you, Jim. We have already started working on those previews, just so you know, and those will be out. But good question, because Alabama versus Florida State features most likely two top five teams. There's a slim chance, I guess, that it could be number one Alabama versus number two Florida State. Those are pretty high stakes, right? But again, as our intelligent Daily Dose listener has pointed out, Florida versus Michigan, that game is actually taking place in Arlington, Texas. Could have way bigger stakes, because while a loss for Alabama or Florida State, it would hurt a little bit, it wouldn't eliminate them from contention. And when you think of Jim McElwain, and when you think of Jim Harbaugh, a loss for either Florida or Michigan could knock them out of even the top 25. A loss for either one of those programs could have them unranked completely. And the problem is with Florida and Michigan, each of those teams are still going to have like 3-4 more games against ranked opponents. So yeah, it does have some major repercussions. And I think the Florida-Michigan game is one that you are definitely going to want to watch, because somebody is going to start off the season with a very, very tough loss. Yeah, that could have very high stakes. Moving on, I think this is our last one. Let's get this. Clint, I enjoy the Daily Dose every week. I have heard you say that you can give some advice. I have to give a best man toast for my best friend later this summer when he gets married in July. What do you have for me? That is from Tommy D. Okay, I have had to do the best man toast. I'm telling you right now, Tommy, you're in a bad spot, because here's the deal. The spotlight and the pressure is completely on you to not screw this up. But somehow this toast can't be about you. It has to be about the happy couple. So here's the fine line that you kind of have to walk. You've got to be funny, but not too funny. You probably have some great stories about that weekend in Tijuana and your friends and the groom and, I don't know, a donkey, but you probably shouldn't tell that story. Having said that, you don't want to go too far that way. You also don't want to go too far the other way, where, you know, you've been at a wedding where it's obvious the best man has been worn probably by the bride. Not to say anything colorful whatsoever. So he gets up there and he's just like, yeah, I've known both of them and I hope they have a good marriage. And here's to the bride and the groom. And that's not fun either, right? So I guess if I had any advice for you, it would be this. First, know your couple. If the bride and the groom are okay with what you say, or the story that you're going to tell or whatever, then you're probably on the right track. Don't offend the bride. Don't embarrass the groom. Don't put him in a bad spot. Secondly, you kind of have to know your audience. Like, you can tell a story about, I don't know, the bride and the groom getting drunk and throwing up on each other and how they still loved each other despite that or whatever. That's when you knew they were a perfect match. I get all that. But if grandma and grandpa are going to go like into a cardiac arrest when you tell that story, you might want to retone it, reword it, something like that. Here's the best advice that I'll give you. Don't drink too much before your toast. Don't try to wing it. Like, write down a couple thoughts, process them, think them over. If you do either one of those things, you might be getting in over your head. And also, don't feel like you have to do like a 20-minute stand-up routine. Like, 2 to 3 minutes, tell a quick personal story. Don't make it about you. That's probably what's going to work best. That would be my advice. Or, honestly, just completely go off the rails, get blackout drunk, tell stories about you met some ladyboy over in Singapore. Do whatever you want. I don't care. It's just another failed marriage. The only difference, you'll probably be partially responsible for it. So no pressure, Tommy. No pressure. Try not to ruin the big day. Hey, next week on the show, we have something else very special for you. Yes, we have our third annual Daily Dose Dosey Awards. If you aren't familiar with the Dosey Awards, every summer we do our Dosey Award show. We hand out awards for daily dose-like greatness over the past calendar year. I'm telling you right now, you don't want to miss it. The greatest moments, the top players, the best coaches, we have it all, sort of. And of course, we do it Daily Dose style. What I'm saying is we value things a little bit differently here at The Dose than a lot of award shows might. We have a very selective process to win the highly esteemed Daily Dose Dosey Award. Make sure that you tune in. Hey, if you would like to recommend the podcast, then we would appreciate that so much. Please let your friends, family, and coworkers know. They can subscribe to the podcast wherever fine podcasts are hosted. Go over to iTunes. Of course, blogtalkradio.com has every single episode. And if you want to share the podcast without talking to someone, just click that share button wherever you listen, and you can send a friend or whoever it might be a link to the show. And if they're technically challenged, that kind of hooks it up for them. All they've got to do is click on your link. Also, make sure that you stop by our podcast network, rogueintel.com. The Daily Dose is a proud member of the Rogue Intel Podcast Network, and they have a number of other podcasts over there you are going to like and get addicted to. So head over there and check out a few of the new shows that are up over at rogueintel.com. Feel free to contact us. You saw today, you contact the Daily Dose, you might get your email read, might have to talk about it a little bit. We've got smart listeners, and that makes this part the best part. If you'd like to email us, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or go find us on Facebook or Twitter. Have to say thank you to all of you for listening. Genuinely, our numbers are getting stronger, and that is thanks to all of you. I genuinely appreciate it. Whatever it is that you're doing, sharing the show, talking about the show, putting the show out there, liking when you see it on Twitter, whatever, it's working, so keep doing it. I truly do appreciate it. Thank you to everyone out there who contributed an email. Yes, even Larry and Centennial, I appreciate your email. And also, just those who have reached out and said, hey, love the show. Maybe I didn't read that email specifically on the podcast today, but we really, really do appreciate those. If you're out there, different country, different state, whatever, we would love to hear from you. It is appreciated. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next week for the Daily Dose Dosey Awards. Have a great week, everybody.